Welcome to Insights as a Service. Again, this week we're talking to Nigel Moore, the man who started Tech Tribe to empower other MSPs to really go on, do things bigger, better, smarter, and learn, I guess, from being part of a community of MSPs across the world. This week, hopefully you've listened to last week's episode, but if you haven't, please go back and do that. If you have, this week is going to make a lot more sense to you, where Nigel talks about sales and marketing from his point of view, the ways to differentiate a brand in a commoditized market, where voice fits in as a service offering, along with privacy consultancy and security. It's a really in-depth conversation. He's got a lot of really great points to make, so let's get stuck in. So you kind of give me a nice segue because you mentioned sales before. So sales strategies for MSPs, what are you seeing work? What is just not worth giving a crack? Educate me. What are you seeing?
Oh, good question. Sales is such a deep topic that I struggled with so many years in my MSP because I didn't want to, I had this mindset that if you're selling, you're in the same bucket as a used car salesman. And so I struggled with sales for so long until I started reading and learning all these things around sales actually being a service that you provide to your clients. Because if you believe in your product and your offering so much, you should, like, it's your duty to go out and bring people into it. Because if you don't, they might lose their business in if they're dealing with a crappy IT company, or they might lose their, which will result in them losing their family and result in all their team members getting fired and all that sort of stuff. And in the last couple of years, my mentality really flipped over that, in that I'm not a used car slimy salesman trying to sell someone something that they don't want. I've built a service here that's incredibly important for small businesses to have. And most small businesses don't understand how important that is at the moment. And my job is to educate them on what they don't know, help them be a little bit scared. And people say, hey, don't sell with fear. You actually have to in our space, but you've got to do it without going over the top. You've got to kind of strike a balance in that you've got to make sure that your customers are fearful of the landscape, because they should be, because the landscape is scary. And then you've got to help them make the right decisions around how to solve those areas that they've got risk in, or whatever it happens to be. And to me, sales at the moment is that. It's about building an offering that's awesome to whoever you're serving, that's going to protect them the best they can and serve them the best they can and whatever it is. And then getting out there and having wildly passionate conversations and wildly, like, business level conversations with your clients to help figure out whether your offering is right for them. If so, educate them on the risks and stuff around it, and then wildly passionately sell it to them because they need it. They absolutely need it out there. And I know us, like our tech industry, we're mostly extremely introverted people. And so getting out there and doing that sort of stuff can be very scary. And as I said, it was scary for me for a decade. But the more you flip your mindset around to these people need this, and if they don't, they're going to be the ones that fall victim to the crap out there, then it becomes a duty. It's not something that you're not bundling something up that they don't need. You're selling something that they absolutely, to the core, like, you believe to the core that they need, and it's going to help them save their business, help them run a better business, help them be more profitable and innovate faster and do whatever they've got to do better. And when you get to that in the mentality, then the whole sales things becomes easier. There's a million different sales tactics and strategies and processes that can be plugged in once you do that. But it really starts from the belief. You've got to have that belief first that what you've built is amazing and is helpful for them, and they need it. And once you got that, find a strategy that works for you. It might be Sandler, it might be whatever. There's tons of sales training strategies out there. Find whatever works for you and go and use it. Go and use it to go out and do that work and get clients coming in to use your product and come into your product and offering. That's going to save their business and it's going to make them better. And that's it. It's kind of simple. We kind of complicate it too much a lot of the time.
It is kind of simple, but there's a couple of things to unpack there. One is that, so I like to think along similar lines, like, we're not looking to sell something, we're looking to understand what problem we can help a business solve. That's cool, but from what you're saying, a lot of businesses don't know that they've got a problem to solve because they're completely clueless as to what risks apply. So, okay, cool. That means that you've got to kind of explore a little bit, go through some sort of exploration process. Then you've got to get some sort of unicorn who is both personable and clued up. So that's hard, and especially in this labor market. So then you've got this whole, okay, how do you give them the framework, which is maybe where you come in, to understand how they go through that process to discover the problems that may exist and then where the value can be added for that business. So is that part of what you guys offer? Is that part of the problem that you help solve?
We do a little bit of sales training in there, not much. We focus more on marketing training and marketing in there. And the reason being is that we don't do any sales in the Tech Tribe either. Everything, like our marketing sells the Tech Tribe, and we don't have, there's no way you can call us up to have a sales call or anything like that. Like, it literally, people sign up because of it. And so I'm a big believer in that. The more you can get your marketing to do the work for you, sales nearly becomes irrelevant in the thing. And you end up becoming a, like in my MSP, we never did any hard sales out there. Like, it was just marketing doing the work for us via our referral systems and our pre-framing of conversations that we had, like the discovery sessions that you're talking about, that did a bit of the work for us. And then, as you said, it was just diving in there and understanding, like, what are your challenges? What are your pain points? And what don't you know at the moment? And then just presenting that to them and doing that to them, getting them, like going through that process with them. In terms of the training around that stuff, like, if the, as you said, like trying to hire that person, like the penultimate sales person from an MSP that everyone's trying to find, right? Like, it's hard. And it's one of the, as I'll say to most nimble MSPs, it's one of the last roles that you're going to need to hire in your business, because everything else, like your service delivery team and your help desk support and your admin team and your service delivery manager and all that sort of stuff is going to be much easier for you to solve than your sales team out there. So when you do get to that point, you will hopefully then have some time where you've built up a really good knowledge of all the most common pain points and all the most common objections and all of the most common leads that you can use to get into a business to start a conversation, because you've been doing it for so long. And hopefully you've spent some time gathering all of that stuff and building your own framework up around it. And when you do have that stuff, it's then easy, much easier, I'm not going to say easy, easier to then have that person come in and mirror you and sit alongside you and know that they've got access to the material that you've got access to, knowing that they've got all of this objection handling stuff in place and knowing they've got all of the education pieces in place to be able to make their job easier. And so then they're just, as you said, if you can find the right personality and you've got some of that stuff in place and you've been doing some degree of sales, like you're probably not going to be the world's most amazing sales rep in an MSP, but if you've got some degree of sales approach that you take in things, you can bring a salesperson in or someone with a great personality in and get them up and running in a 3 to 6 month period fairly semi-easily, as long as you put in that work beforehand. Finding them, as you say, is hard in this current labor market, and we're not known as a sexy industry like the SaaS world, like what? The enterprise SaaS world and whatnot. Maybe you guys are in telco land, but holy crap, like IT
definitely not. No,
IT support is hard. It is one of the hardest roles to, I'm going to say probably the hardest role to hire in an MSP is that sales, like the hunter out there. The account managers are a little bit easier because you can often progress a tech up to account management if they want to get on the business side of things. But a hunter, that's a hard one to go and do. And you've got to, I see most nimble MSPs to the point where they get up to 20 staff and that's the last hat they've still got on. Like, that's the last piece that they've still got on their plate. Everything else is off their plate up until around that kind of size in there.
I think there's a really interesting conversation to have there about the place of a hunter, like an out-and-out hunter in the modern tech, whether it's MSP or telco space. I'm just not sure that it resonates the sales pitch kind of, hey, you know, can I just have 5 minutes of your time? I want to do this. Like, I don't know if it lands. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. But
it works, but it's just numbers, right? It's
so numbers.
It's just a numbers game. Like, you've got to have 400 of that conversation now. Like, hey, can I just grab a minute? Like 20 years ago, you only needed 10 of that conversation to have a hot lead. Nowadays, it's kind of, people are so immune to that kind of sales approach that it's harder. It just works. It still works. And I think it will always work because it's just numbers. But the ratio, it gets down to where you're far better off investing that time into building an awesome marketing funnel and better education and all of that stuff up front. Top of funnel stuff. And then some really good stuff nurturing in between, which most MSPs, like that middle of the funnel space, most MSPs miss that, and I've missed that in my MSP as well, is that, like, you get someone into your world, you might meet them at a conference, a business conference, or a networking event, or whatever it happens to be, and they come into your world, and you have one conversation or two conversations with them, not realizing that the sales cycle in an MSP is so ridiculously bloody long that you've got to have 50 or 20 conversations, and a lot of those conversations can be one-to-many. They can be marketing-based things or automation-based things in there, but that's
where
the
feed that value, right?
It's just drip-feeding value. There's a million different ratios out there, right? Like, for every five bits of value, you can throw in a pitch, but there's no real ratio out there that's the perfect ratio. You just got to go and test and know that you just got to provide a crap ton of value and nurture and educate and ask good questions and have engaging conversations, and make sure that there's an underlying current of having it easily available for them to know where to go to next, right? Or what the next level of step or what the next step is in that conversation. And that might be, hey, can we have a conversation around this or that or whatever it happens to be? But that nurturing middle of funnel component is so heavily underdone across the whole landscape.
Massively. But I think there's something there too. If you've got this hunter out there kind of pestering, because by definition, that approach needs to be quite full on. Like they can't really take no for an answer, right? They kind of got to keep pushing. And if you've worked hard to create this persona with your business that we're here to help, you know, we're a trusted brand, we're full of value, you know, you talk to us when you're ready and we're going to be here with the answers. But, you know, other than that, sort of on your schedule, and you've got this person representing your brand kind of going, but talk to me now, now. And it's like, does that do damage to the brand? Yeah. Does it offset the messaging and other parts of the marketing and sales engine? And I'm not saying I'm right, but I think it's worth kind of a discussion.
I'm 1,000% with you. And if I had an MSP today, I would be doing whatever I possibly could to not have hunters in my business whatsoever. I would be doing, and nowadays I'm, back when I had my MSP, I was okay-ish at marketing, okay to bad, I would say. Nowadays, I'm very confident at marketing. And so I would, if I had an MSP today or I was working, consulting with an MSP today, I would be going so front heavy on the marketing side of things to make sure it does all the work so that when conversations are coming in, they're not to a hunter, they're coming to a, and I'm going to, I hate this word as well, the closer, but more a person that's there to, like the consultative person that's there to help them figure out what, whether we can help you, like you've come into, from our funnel, what in whatever way, shape or form, you've got to the point where you're now having a conversation with us. My goal is to not sell you anything. My goal typically is to filter you out as whenever I'm going to start this conversation off and then figure out what your challenge is, like what are your struggles and what are your challenges and why have you called us? Why us? Why now? And then prescribe what the best plan of attack is from here, not with a heavy sales hand in there whatsoever. And we talk about this thing every now and then called the anti-sales follow-up in our business. And that's where, when you know what it's like when you might be in a bidding war with a couple of other MSPs for a new client because they've gone out to market, and you go out and everybody goes and does the discovery work, and then they go and throw all these 20-page proposals together, and they go and some MSPs still email the proposals across, which I think is a mistake. But they get all the proposals across, and then it sits in the person's hands, and that person's then got to make a decision. And most people out there go, okay, well, now I've got to do the follow-up. Like there's the two mistakes people make is, number one, they don't follow up at all, which is a cardinal sin. But the second mistake they make is they follow up trying to get the sale. And it's like, hey, can we have a talk? Like, I want to talk about, is it good? Or like, are you ready to sign or whatever? Whereas you should be going to them with the anti-sales follow-up and saying, hey guys, we know you've got a tough decision to make here. Here's some things, like here's a quick book to help you make that decision better. And whether it's us or whether it's one of the other guys, you can use this decision-making framework to make your decision around your new IT company better. That's going to position you 5 layers above everybody else that's getting on the phone saying, hey, have you read my proposal in there? And that's
a great chance for some social proof too, right? Like here's some more valuable content, something that might assist in decision-making, or a matrix that might assist, or some framework, but also, you know, here's some businesses that are in the same vertical or whatever that have had great experiences that would be happy to have a chat. Like something that's not too kind of make a decision and give me a good answer. It's more like just here's a little bit more just help, I guess. But something that strikes me as interesting is, so if we're going to rely on the marketing qualified leads, I guess, to drive that sort of sales qualification process, it's probably two things. One is the sales qualification process, which we're talking about there, you've got to know who you want to sell to. So you can kind of filter out that, no, you don't fit our market. We don't want to waste your time. We're not best placed to add value to your business here. So let's just, here's some other names for you to talk to that are well-placed in your range. So you got to know who you're targeting. But the second part is, if you're going to lead with marketing and try and go through the whole process we've just outlined, they have to know what problem they're trying to solve, right? Which kind of gets you to a certain level of business. And you know, whether that's a level of maturity, a level of scale, a level of awareness and in-house knowledge. Is there a size or a scale that you recommend MSPs to target because of the ability to really make your marketing efforts land?
Yeah, it really does depend a lot on the MSP, because a 3-4 person MSP can bring on a 3-4-5 person business and still make profits out of it. They're not wildly great profits, and the cost of getting that client is probably going to take a few good money months to pay off. But you've got to start from somewhere, right? And so, so I think the way it happens is as you, and I've seen this across the entire industry as a whole, is as you scale, so does your level of what you allow in as a client scales, and it kind of grows with you. And so when I started my first MS, or when I started my MSP, I had home users in there. I had a couple, but not many. When I sold my MSP, we typically had a qualification process. We had this call called the Right Fit Call, which was a 15-minute call, 9 questions that I would jump on, and we'd do it via a phone call for any inbound leads that came in via referrals or Google Ads or whatever it was. And we would do that qualification call really, really quickly. And I had this little piece of paper, we've got it inside the Tech Tribe, that had 9 questions on it, literally just to figure out whether they were an ideal client for us. And if they weren't, we respectfully gave them some areas that they could go and find in there. And I think as any MSP grows, if you're growing in your MSP, that level of the type of client that you're going to let in naturally grows in there. It just naturally grows as you grow. And you realize that you end up getting, I'm not going to say stuck, but you've got people there in your business that don't become aren't an ideal client for you anymore. And you've got to be respectful and move them on. I made a mistake in my business. I've talked about lots of mistakes here, but that's why I love doing what I do. In that, as I grew and scaled, I started to get, like, the ego started to come into play a little bit with the smaller clients. And I would then, instead of being nice and respectful to them, when they called up, I was a little bit rude to them, horribly, which I look back in hindsight now and I go, man, you were an idiot, Nigel. Like, that is just horrible behavior. But I was a little bit rude because, hey, we're growing now. Like, you guys are a little bit small for us. In hindsight, and I started doing this in the latter years, what I did was, and I went, hey, guys, like, we're heading in different directions. We're just not going to be able to do the level of stuff that we need to do to you guys. You guys, and we're just going to screw it up, and you're going to get annoyed with us because of the rules that we put in place and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. We've just got to have that conversation where we're going to help you guys move off to someone else. And here's how we're going to do it. We're going to give you the 3 months kind of thing in there. We've got a couple of people that we recommend that are going to work really well for you. And just move them off. And as you're growing and scaling your business, you've got to be continually doing that, like growing the minimum level of client that you will take on, because you're going to realize that as you grow a team, you're going to realize that margins are much harder to make out of smaller clients. The cost of acquisition also grows as you're doing it. So you need to have a certain degree of gross margin that you're making out of clients to make it profitable. And as you're doing that, don't forget to clean up and move along respectfully all the people that don't fit you anymore. Before, instead of doing my way of just getting angry at them, because it's not their fault that you're growing, right? They just want help, and they want your help, and
they're part of the reason you have grown, right?
Correct, like, exactly, you right. Yeah, 100%. And so I made that mistake a few times, once or twice. I did it, and I looked at myself and went, "Oh, Nigel, that's horrible behavior."
You're not alone. I think it's quite common, and I think it aligns really well. Last week I was talking to Paul O'Dwyer from 20 Mile March, and he was saying the same thing. You've got to constantly appraise the fit of your customer base to where your business is. And for me, I think it just reaffirms that whole need to carry out a positioning and pricing review every year. You've got to look at, are your margins right? Are your pricing assumptions right? And do they fit the market you're now best aligned to serve? And has your ideal customer definition changed over that time? So that all comes into it. Hey, something I asked you before we jumped on, we didn't get much of a chance to talk about it though, but I'm interested. So as I was telling you, we had an event here on the Gold Coast where I'm based. What are we talking now? We're talking December. And we had a number of MSPs in the room, a bunch of great people, but collectively, there was a lot of mistrust in the room. You know, there was, we've got some great staff members and I don't really want that other mob having a look at them, you know, and thinking about offering them a job. You know, it's a massive market here on the Gold Coast. So maybe there was definitely some worry about some of the larger customers, you know, I'm not sure I trust them, or I don't know. There was just there was not a feeling of camaraderie. There was a feeling of unease. Right. How have you got past that? Or is that just a weird Gold Coast thing?
Could be just a weird Gold Coast thing. Cause I actually, in my space, we see lots of groups of MSPs coming together. Actually, it's not a weird Gold Coast thing. It's probably the nature. You would have just had a number of MSPs in the room that are thinking from a scarcity mindset and they don't realize the potential of their marketplace. And so that does happen. It happens in lots of industries. I remember I was talking to someone at a business coaching group that I was at, and I was talking about our industry and how we always have these events where MSPs get in the room and they help each other like crazy. And quite often they'll help each other to the detriment of, like, they're helping their competitors essentially. To their own detriment, like losing their own money. And that was me. Like, I was helping out other MSPs when I was in the community. And our industry is like that. a lot more than others. And I was talking to him about this, and he went, oh man, I work in the hairdressing industry. If you put three hairdressers in the same area in the same room, there will be guns pulled or like claws made in there. And I think our industry is pretty unique in that. And the reason, my belief is that most people that start an MSP, they don't go out there and start it because they want to grow this amazing big business. They go out there and start it because they love technology and they love helping people. Profits and all that other stuff come at a very, very, very distant second. And so our industry typically, in all the communities that I've been involved in for the last 15 years around the place, are very open and very willing to help and serve others. And there's a slight subsection in there that typically will come into the community. This was me when I first saw the MSP community. I was that guarded person. And I came in going, oh, like these guys are all my competitors. I'm in the same room. And I remember going to my first ever community meeting at a Microsoft building in Sydney, probably 2008, I reckon it was. And and I walked in the room and I looked around and I was like, oh, these guys are all my competitors in here. I don't even know if I should talk to them, let alone anything. And we're sitting watching a presentation. And then in the break, I kind of stand up the back and a guy comes up and talks to me. And we start getting into the managed service agreements and stuff like that. And because I was kind of playing around with managed service agreements in 2008. And I'm going, oh, I don't want to give this guy too much information because I'm like his competitor. And he goes, dude, what's your email address? And I went, oh, like, are you going to spam me or what? And I give it to him. And he goes, I'm going to send you my managed service agreement and all my pricing setup. You can have a look. And I went, like, my jaw fell to the floor. And I went, what? Like, you're my competitor. You're 20 kilometers down the road from me. And you're going to send me all this stuff that I've been trying to figure out in my own business for years. And that guy's name is Mark. And he's now in the tech tribe to this day and still runs a successful MSP in Sydney. And that, to me, is the behavior that I have now seen mirrored throughout the entire world, all the time, everywhere for the past couple of decades. The past decade and a bit. And I think it's awesome. It comes from that love of helping people and that love of it comes from two things, that love of helping and serving others in technology and not having a scarcity mindset out there. And when you look at our marketplaces, like Sydney is probably an anomaly because it's a rather large marketplace in there, but even the smaller marketplaces, there is the competition really is not the other MSPs out there. The competition is all in your head. You're just not selling well enough. You're not doing marketing well enough. You're not doing all of this other stuff well enough. It's not that your competitors are stealing your clients out there. And so I think it's more a maturity thing that's out there, that the more mature you come and the more you go towards an abundance mentality in your marketplace and your confidence in your offering, the less you care about your competitors out there at all.
I think you're right. The scarcity mindset's a great call. I think a lot of it though, because of the current, you know, COVID situation, yeah, always gets a mention. I think the you know, availability of people is just limited. And yeah, I think that's created a lot of that scarcity mindset. It's like, oh, I've just got to hold on to everything best I can because it's so difficult to find good people. And, you know, the people that got it are so great or whatever. But yeah, you're totally right. And I think that was a mindset shift for me a while back too, particularly with smaller telcos. I enjoy talking to them now. We can learn off each other. It's great. Whereas I used to see everyone as a threat, but you're right. I mean, the market's big enough. There's plenty to go around. I was just going to say, sometimes I get a bit annoyed with the bigger corporates, but that's right, kind of slightly different play. It's kind of can be a little bit bullying sometimes, but certainly with, you know, the sort of mid-tier telcos, they're always full of good people who are just trying to, you know, do something a bit differently. And there's a lot to learn there.
There is. And what's the old saying? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer, right? And whilst I don't feel like we've got any enemies in the tech tribe, like we've got competitors and all of our competitors are inside the tribe. Like we allow them to come and join inside the tribe because I see it as this free marketplace. And with when you talk about the worry of losing staff to someone else, I also see that as like when you look at that particular scenario and you go, oh, like I don't want to take my staff along to these things. And I don't want to send them to events in case they get poached and whatever. That means you're running scared because you don't feel like you've created a good enough business that's going to retain your staff. And to me, that just means there's huge opportunity there for you to dive into those weeds and figure out why you're scared of your staff leaving. You shouldn't be scared of your staff leaving. If you are, then it means you probably need to focus on your culture or your workspace or your team management or whatever it happens to be and get to the point where they don't want to leave. And I've had many maybe four or five staff over the years tell me up front about the poach offers that they've got out there. And they go, hey, like, we've just been offered this. I just thought I'd let you know. There's no way I'm taking it, and it's more money and whatever it happens to be. They stay because you build this family, this culture, this whatever it is, this movement that they're coming along to. I did lose one or two over the years to poaching where I But that was it. Also in my early years where I didn't know about culture and didn't know about looking after my team and whatnot. And I place the blame more on me for putting them in a crappy work environment where it made sense for them to go and work somewhere else. As I created more work environments where it just didn't make sense because they knew that if they go over there, they're not going to get the amazing culture or whatever that we've got here, then it means that you worry far less about that stuff out there. Not to say that it's not going to happen. Like, it's still always going to happen. And telco, I know, is pretty cutthroat out there. MSP is not as bad, probably nowhere near as bad. Most MSPs will sell you their team member in there and say, hey, if you need some extra help, I'll happily do it at cost. And you can use my team and for overflow, whatever it is, and we're just going to charge you cost for that particular resource in there. And that happens all the time. We had a number of those agreements in there. Rather than poaching, you just say, hey, we'll cooperate and we'll work together in here. You need overflow, you work with our team. If we need overflow, we'll work with your team over there.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. We've got very, very low turnover of staff at Lightwire, but it takes a hell of a concerted effort to create that culture. And there's a real investment, but I think the investment pays off many times over if you get it right. Hey, something that's very close to my heart with my telco hat on. Telco services in the MSP space, particularly voice for me, is an interesting one. What part do you think that plays? What's your advice generally to MSPs around telco services? You answer.
Coming from someone that I think it was 2012 or something, and we should rebrand this episode into Nigel's Mistakes. But I started a telco with one of those what are they called? Like the it was telco in a box, but it was another one of those ones back then, where an MSP could go and spend $20,000 and get the whole access to the whole everything,
white billing engine, everything,
white label everything. And I did all of that. Yeah. I put the $20,000 in and tried to go and build this business up on the side of my MSP and realized how incredibly different those two business models are. One's typically high volume, low margins. Like telco is typically high volume, lower margins than whatever, and different selling process and different teams that you need and all that kind of stuff. And MSP is a wildly different business model. I just assumed that both being in tech, they're both the same, right? But they weren't. And so what I typically tell most nimble MSPs nowadays is, unless you've really got the skills in place to try and go and be a telco as well, don't. Go and partner with someone and have either a wholesale thing or a commission-based thing where you can go and let them be awesome at being telcos, which has a different model, and you can be awesome at the MSP side of things or the IT services side of things. And at a certain point in an MSP's maturity or size or whatever it happens to be, they will get to the point where it might then make sense to start bringing some more stuff in-house. But that's not until you're probably running at 20, 30, 40, 50 staff at that point in time. Like, anyone below that, partner. Like, don't try and boil the ocean by being an awesome MSP and an awesome telco at the same time and trying to run SIP services and all this kind of stuff, because it just takes your eye off the prize. If you put all of that effort that you go into building out your entire telco side of your business for the tiny margins you're probably going to make unless you've got a good sales team in there, then you're taking all that time and effort and energy away from marketing. And if you like, you could go and put that time and effort and energy into building these top of funnel and middle of funnel things that we've been talking about, that's going to drive high margin MSP clients to your business. And then if you've got an awesome telco partner that you can partner with, you then get your trails or whatever it happens to be out of that particular deal. And then in a couple of years' time, when you might be at the point where it makes more sense and the margins and the cross-selling and all that stuff makes sense at that point in time, maybe look at bringing it in-house. But I, most of the time, I'm an advocate of partnering out there.
It's interesting. I think, you know, there's the two models, right? And I'm going to be really careful not to sound salesy here, so I'm going to keep it real short. But I think there's the revenue side. You got to have some pretty solid scale to do that. But there's the stickiness side, right? Like, limiting the churn by giving the competition one less avenue into your customer base. And I think, you know, that's kind of where I typically go to in those conversations. That for me, it's just a safeguard. And you can achieve that through partnering, as long 100%. As the telco you're working with 100%. Isn't into the MSP side.
The MSP side, yeah. And so we had that in our MSP. After I shut down the telco and realized, we then found a telco that was just caring about data carriage and voice and all of that sort of stuff. And they did it really, really well. And they were only 25 staff. So they were small, which meant that we could deal with the whole team up and down and whatever. And we just had an agreement. They would send us MSP clients. We would send them telco clients. And we worked with them across loads of our clients out there, putting in big links and small links and DSL and whatever. They didn't ever want to get into the MSP space, and we didn't want to get into the telco space at that point in time. And that partnership was awesome out there. Worked really, really well.
That's really from what I see, that's changing too. Like a lot of telcos now are going, where's more margin? Yeah. Where's more revenue? Yeah, yeah. And they're looking at the MSP space, yeah, and the MSPs are looking at the telco space, like as you did, you know? So there's that real convergence, but I think there's
have you ever still... seen it? Oh, sorry, you finish.
No, no. If you're going to ask, have I ever seen it work?
Yeah.
Is that the question? Not yet. No. Same here. I think it tends to just piss more people off. Yeah.
Exactly,
I think,
right.
Telcos that go into the MSP space just piss off all their MSP partners. The MSPs that go in let their customers down. Not always. I'm sure some have nailed it that I just haven't spoken to.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not a recipe for success usually.
Yeah. I have as yet not. I've only probably seen it work successfully in one or two situations. I've very, 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 very rarely seen anyone get even good at it. Most of the time it's bad. A bad experience for the end users, which is ultimately what it's really all about. And so I think most telcos are doing it because they're chasing the dollar out there, not realizing that they're better off chasing the dollar by being a better telco, not by trying to become an MSP. In when you get to a certain size, though, there becomes that whole thing of perhaps buying an MSP and having it all under the same umbrella and whatnot and running them as separate businesses underneath the same thing. And that can and does work. But when you're trying to say, okay, we're just going to start an MSP here and we're going to start offering IT services because we're a telco, without having any domain knowledge, without having any experience, without having the team in place to be able to do it, it's a recipe for disaster pretty much every time out there.
Yeah, can confirm we're not doing it. So
should check that first before
you've
I
just
ranted.
Talked about oh well, you're safe. So the question that you're talking about, as you get bigger, I've got three questions there for you. Biggest barriers to scale, MSPs, what stops them getting bigger?
This all the head trash. It's all just head trash. But most of it is just not building a marketing engine, simple as that. Like you've got MSPs get to a certain point via referrals and referrals alone, but what typically happens is you get to the point where you've grown your MSP to a point with referrals, like other customers recommending you, but because you're at a certain point in scale and you don't have the margins to scale any further, your service delivery starts to go down at that point in time and you start losing any future referrals because you're dipping in your service delivery. And so I'm a big proponent of MSPs knowing that referral marketing will only get you so far. Focus on building a marketing or a growth engine in there in some way, shape or form. And in the early stages, it's going to be rudimentary and crap and not get results, but keep at it and 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 invest and invest and invest and invest. And you can't not get to the point where you're doing results out there if you just keep learning and figuring out what mistakes or what lessons there are and whatnot. And so scale really starts with making sure you've got a marketing engine as well as it goes without saying that the back end has to scale as well, right? You've got to scale your service delivery and your projects and whatever, but I got to the point where we hired a service manager in my business, and that was for the first time in my life I could see that we could scale a service delivery team without me being involved in it. And that's when I got far more comfortable on worrying about marketing and focusing on marketing, was when I had a person in place that could make good decisions to help scale up a service delivery team without me having to be involved. And so that marketing engine then became far more important than to make sure that we're doing that top of funnel, middle of funnel stuff out there.
Okay, cool. So basically, be smart with your marketing. Get out of the way and make sure you got the frameworks for your team to scale.
Yeah. Easy ones.
Done.
They sound easy.
Yeah, they're all easy. Hard. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're hard, but you've got to look at the top level and just go, okay, well, we're not doing any marketing. Let's start something. Let's try and figure out something. And what I will always say to people, MSPs, when they're doing marketing is don't get creative in the early stages. Don't try and go, oh, well, I'm going to come up with this crazy new awesome marketing strategy out there. Go with what all the other MSPs out there are having success with right now and just learn to mirror that and learn to get good at that sort of stuff first before you go and get creative. Because I see...
What are they using? Like, are we talking like ActiveCampaign? They're running Salesforce? Like, what are you seeing used well in terms of marketing engines or...
So they're the tools. Like, we use ActiveCampaign in our business. They're the tools, but the strategies are more things like Google Ads, like top of funnel Google Ads, trying to go for that intent-based marketing where someone's searching for IT support New York or IT support Sydney or whatever it happens to be. That works incredibly well. Takes a bit of time to figure out all the unit economics of your ad spend and how much you should spend and whatever. But that works because you're getting people that are looking for an IT company right now. They're like decision ready. So that works. Direct mail works and works incredibly well. It just takes time and money. But it's better invested into a medium that works and works well. And by direct mail, I'm talking about like print newsletters coupled with targeted campaigns where you're going out and trying to get a company to go and take a particular call to action or whatever it happens to be. I've, I normally have some on my desk, but I don't at the moment. But we've got a bunch.
I guess are you talking? So there, we're talking like account-based marketing, almost, where you have a target, you know who you want to get on board, and you create something compelling for them specifically.
Yeah, like you could start with a lead magnet if you wanted to, or a mini workshop, or you could go and run a lunch and learn for them. Like there's a ton of MSPs doing incredible business out of lunch and learns around cybersecurity in their local areas, and that becomes your right at the top of funnel thing, where you just go out and you go, okay, we're gonna get really good at delivering this once a month lunch and learn event, and we're going to do it in our local area. And each month, like the first month, you might have 3 people turn up because you haven't figured out how to get people in yet and you haven't built your network, but that's okay. Don't stop there. Try and figure out how you can get 5 at your next month's one, and figure out how you can get more conversations from those 5 coming and talking to you. So lunch and learns work incredibly well. They take a bit of time to set up. Direct mail works incredibly well. Networking always works. Being far more intentional about your referral management works. Like lots of people just sit hands off and think it's just going to work. But if you start to put some real actionable strategies around referrals and extracting referrals, and where I always tell people is start with giving referrals. Like don't just expect them to turn up if you're not giving referrals out to your clients and your people in your network as well, and in connecting them and bringing them into other people and whatnot. And that works. So Google Ads works. Facebook ads, I've seen a couple of MSPs do it, but it's hard. We've been through the Facebook ads world, and we got it working for us in the tech tribe, but we've got a very low barrier to entry, and we're selling a completely different thing. And it's not something I'd normally recommend an MSP start their marketing journey off in Facebook ads. You can get it to work. You're probably going to have to spend 10 to 15 grand upfront on lessons, and knowing that you're not going to get anything, and you might get a client after those 10 to 15 grand in there. But over time, you can get your costs down to 1 grand to 3 grand, which I'm seeing a lot of people get out of Facebook ads and Google ads and some of those other top of funnel things, like 3 grand cost.
What about LinkedIn? Do you rate that?
Yeah, I haven't seen any MSPs doing advertising like PPC on LinkedIn, but for networking, heck yes, there is a ton of MSPs doing it. And we've got a big 3-hour, 20 something lesson workshop with tons of templates and everything inside the tribe of how to use LinkedIn to go and grow your MSP. We've had hundreds of our members go through that and successfully get clients out of going through that process. And it's the world's largest database of business owners. Like it's there ready for you. You've just got to go and pick a strategy and go and actually do the daily committed work to go and make it work for you. But yeah, it's awesome. In terms of PPC though, I know it works. I just haven't come across an MSP that's doing it yet. If I had an MSP today, I'd be starting off retargeting on all the networks like Facebook, Google Display Network, LinkedIn, or whatever. Instead of doing top of funnel, I'd be focusing top of funnel on other things to start with, and then once I got good at it and learned those lessons, then I'd start top of funnel in those.
I'm really conscious I haven't got you for much longer. Just going to say this one thing. I'm really excited to see how it goes. We've just created this Teams Phone ebook, and it's not a sales doc. This is how you provision it using PowerShell. Yeah. This is how you would qualify it to see if it's actually fit for the customers you're talking to. This is how you would actually deploy it. Here's the things it can do and it can't do. Just all that kind of stuff. And just literally an educational piece for MSPs out there who are looking to maybe incorporate that into their modern workplace offering. So I'll let you know how that goes from a engagement perspective.
That's what it's about. I'll just show you one little piece that you're talking about there. In our industry, our equivalent is something like this. This one here is a little Cybersecurity Essentials for Business Owners booklet, right? It's Tech Tribe branded, but we give this out in a template where all our members can slap their own logo on the top of it. And it's a 40-page book that runs through all the cybersecurity controls, and it's designed nicely, and it's runs through NIST frameworks and all the protect and respond and stuff like that. That there is value. That's something that you can use in the top of your funnel to go on and get people into your world. And our members all get access to that. They can go and slap their logo on the back and the front, get this printed for a couple of bucks a piece and go and use it in their marketing at events or trade shows or wherever the heck it is. You could post this out to people if you had a good enough list that's qualified enough.
That's so important too, right? Because the nimble MSPs out there, they don't have the resources to come up with a 40-page booklet. You know,
20 grand it cost me to put together.
There you go. It's a lot of time. Yeah. It's a lot of money. I mean, we're 2 months into this this ebook we're doing, and it's 9,500 words and whatever else. It's it's an effort.
Yeah, it's very heavy to create.
So yeah, versus your monthly subscription. There you go. Plug. last thing I wanted to ask about, just Teeth Capital. Just looked like a really interesting investment vehicle framed around that cultural piece that you seem really interested in and really focused on. Can you just give us a quick sort of too long didn't read around Teeth Capital before you take off?
It's literally my holding company that owns my businesses. And the whole premise of it is that we buy and invest into small businesses, and then we sink our teeth into making them better. And so far, we've only done some tiny stuff in it. I've ended up getting to the point where I go, okay, like, we've got some deals coming along. Should I focus on them or should I just focus on the tech tribe? And at the moment, we've kind of decided to focus on the tech tribe and not do much with Teeth Capital. So it's there. And if the right deal came along, I've still got some deal flow coming through for that stuff. If the right deal came along, I'd probably look at it. But it's like deal flow in the capital world is crazy. Like it's way harder than deal flow in the MSP world, like way, way, way harder. And so we're kind of at this point where I'm not doing too much with that at the moment. It owns my company and some other company, stuff, but I'm focusing just all in on the tech tribe and building that and growing that and, getting that to an amazing level. Like the vision in the, where we've got at the moment is kind of 5% of what's sitting in here. And I've got another 95%. I've got to get out in some way, shape or form to go and build that thing.
That's interesting. I guess, so Teeth Capital, I just like the fact that it was very much your personality in what is typically a fairly boring industry on the website. Yes. So good stuff there. The other one is, it feels to me like you didn't have a definition of success for that MSP that you had first up, but I feel like you've probably got that for Tech Tribe. Is that fair? Have you kind of nailed where you want this thing to go?
Now, yes. When I started the Tech Tribe, yes. It was just it was a very broad level of success, like kind of looking at it going like, I just want to create this thing where we help and coach and entertain and enable other MSPs. And it didn't have any specific tangibles around what that looked like at that point in time. As we've grown and we've got like, because then I just went, okay, now we've got to do it. You get into that startup stage where we started with nothing again, no revenue, no client list, no anything. And so I just went, oh, goals, who cares about goals? Let's just try and get some money in the door right now. Like, let's just get this business up because I'd sold my MSP. I had a bunch of money sitting in the bank, but it wasn't going to last me forever. And so I had to then kind of protect that capital by getting a business up and running. And then so over the years, organically though, you then go, okay, now it's time to set some formal goals around this kind of stuff. And we've got some formal goals that we've already kicked them in the butt and you look at them and go, oh, that was way too small. Like now we're, let's try and next time around, think 10 times bigger and 10 times more impact out there as well. And so that's, I'm not one of these guys that sits down and spends these like quarterly retreats in going super deep into this stuff. I'm one of these guys that looks at the opportunity and goes like, we're touching the opportunity 1% at the moment. Let's just keep going hard and fast and see how far we can run with this thing and how much impact we can have. And that's one of the biggest drivers for us is the impact that we can have out there. Like, revenue is good and we're doing good revenue and good profits in the business at the moment, but that's not my biggest driver. My biggest driver is seeing all the amazing comments that we get from people all day, every day about all the amazing things that they get out of the Tech Tribe. And not a week goes by where there's not a number of threads that happen in Facebook groups or wherever it is where someone says, hey, I've heard about the Tech Tribe. Can anyone recommend it? We get 50 people say, best thing I've ever bought, best thing I've ever bought, best thing I've ever bought, best thing I've ever bought. And that's why we do what we do. We do it for that. And part of that probably plays into my childhood love of wanting to fit in, right? Like that's kind of fuel to this whole thing is I just want people to like what we do and get value out of what we do out there. And I was in their shoes for many years, knowing how friggin' hard it is running an MSP from the trenches. And if we can help make that a little bit easier, then it's awesome. I've got a business where people love what we do and we're helping me 15 years ago. And that to me is what it's really all about.
What I'm hearing is that you're advocating for the positive outcomes that come from bullying.
I look back at that time now. I actually saw one of the guys that bullied the crap out of me in school. I saw him recently and it was probably a year ago at a little, like a kid's event thing. And he had his kids there or whatever. I didn't speak to him, but I saw him and I just went, oh man, imagine how different my life would have been if you didn't bully the crap out of me. Like, would I have gone on a different trajectory? I don't know. And I was sitting there, I was kind of appreciative for it, right? Like, I don't know whether that's good to me, but I was looking at it going, man, I'm actually glad that you did what you did, mate, because like it gave me this drive to go and do what I've done. And I look at my life now and I'm so freaking incredibly grateful for what I've been able to do. So as much as it was horrible being bullied and I don't advocate it in any sense of the word, I think I was lucky that I was able to take it as fuel, not as something that tore me apart and burnt me out.
Matt, it's a great lens to put on it. I went to our school's 20th anniversary a little while ago, and I was amazed at how all these people that had, arguably picked on me a fair bit when I was younger, were all nice men now, because it was boys only school, with kids. And I just said to them after the thing, I was like, imagine if we'd all been like this when we're at school. Imagine how many kids' lives would have been so much better if we just weren't a pack of assholes.
Yeah, I reckon.
But there was that thing. Hey, look, I'll wrap it up with one last comment, which is you just talking about your focus there on customer outcomes comes back to a thing I was saying on last week's episode, which was around the focus on good profits. Good profits are derived by just focusing on the customer experience, and profit comes as a byproduct of that, because retention, as you mentioned earlier, is high. The referrals are high, and you can put a greater value on your price points because of the perceived value in what you're doing. So 100% agree, and that's probably a great place to leave it. And then you can get back to your team. Nigel, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And that is it for our conversation with Nigel Moore. Big thanks to him for coming in and sharing his thoughts with us. We'll be back next week. I'll be joined by Nick Phillips, I believe is the plan for this week coming. Yes, it is. Good. So we'll see you again then. In the meantime, as always, Brendan at insightsasaservice.fm, or you can find us on LinkedIn. Any suggestions for topics, always keen to hear them. See you again soon.